This song is dedicated to a certain kind of people, which just so happens to be my other favorite kind of people. You know, the ones that like to, you know, hurt themselves, bro. Skateboard, ollie, bro. Kickflip, split your lip, bro. Kick me in the nuts, bro. You get what I'm saying, right?
White people, I get bullied in school. I can't wait till I'm a cop so I can bully you. White people.
Hey.
White people.
No, no,
we can't dance. And I don't whoop my kids or spank their hands. White people.
Bad Michael, bad. Who's a bad Michael? Go to your room, Michael.
If you poke me on my arm, I bruise easily. So I only quarterback in the football league. I like to watch porn, I can fap for days. And my favorite potato chips are Lay's, because they're white. I take weird drugs like ecstasy, mushrooms, crystal meth, and LSD. We put it in a pipe for a homemade bong. And watch out for the priest, he will rape your son. And most of us would die trying out for fear factor. I guess that's why they say I'm just a country loving deer hunting, rabbit eating, redneck, inbreeding, beer drinking, small penis. Did I mention we drive a tractor? We're red when we're mad, when we're sick we're green. Only race in the world that eats sardines. White girls flat butts, and I know that's mean, but if you try to eat the booty, it tastes like saltines. Back far away from that anus. A white woman came to me to bash my song until she realized I was black, and then she zipped her purse. White people, I get bullied in school. I can't wait till I'm a cop so I can bully you. White people.
Hey.
White people.
No, no,
we can't dance. And I don't whoop my kids or spank their hands. White people.
See, this is probably why white kids end up shooting up schools.
Hey, hey, hey.
Hold up a second. We can't have a white song without the country music in it. Yeehaw!
Still, we all like country music. No, 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 no. Never understand what we're saying. No, 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 no. But if you ever come down to Texas, come chill with me on my porch. Cause we all got shotguns, and we all commute by horse. I said we have arms, we like to mosh. We like Family Guy, and we like Tosh.
I guess my point here is, if you're white, we automatically like you.
White people, I get bullied in school. I can't wait till I'm a cop so I can bully you. White people.
Hey.
White people can't jump that high, so if you're trying to lose the cops, find a fence nearby. White people.
Unless the cop is like, you know, Larry Bird or something, then don't try.
White people, since 76, being jerks making other races look like sh. White people.
Seriously, like all of us are racist.
White people, I know you can't stand me, but we all still evolved from a chimpanzee. White people.
Show Lil.
Hey, hey.
Alright, so this is probably also the most racist song I've written. But if you laugh, you're racist too. So I don't feel bad. Besides, it's not racist if I'm human. You get it? The human race? Ha 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 ha. That's how white people laugh.
Song.
White people song. That was something.
That was from ZFLON Network. Where did you find that, Duke?
Well, I was looking for music for the show tonight, and keeping with the theme, I found a song called Black People, and it was this very racist cartoon song about my favorite kind of people are black people, and I thought, oh, I can't use that. Then I found a parody about the song called White People.
Interesting, because by the way, the topic for tonight's show is black on black crime. It's not about white people specifically, but of course it is talking about race and racism. So, white people are going to come up in that conversation.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
And for those who are tuning in to our show, this is Cindy Gomez-Shemp.
And this is Duke Gomez-Shemp.
And you're listening to KPPP-LP-FM. We are now broadcasting online through Live365. Soon you'll be able to find us on your radio dial at 88.1 FM. And we'll be adding local color to your airwaves.
That's right.
It's going to be exciting.
Yes, very much. I can't wait.
It's not going to be that long from now. You'll be able to go in your car somewhere and flip to 88.1 and listen to us.
That's
on
right.
The air.
We just got to climb a pole, put up an antenna, and install some equipment.
Yeah, it's going to take a little bit longer, but it's coming very soon. And we've had some really interesting developments. We recently started doing a Sunday show.
Oh, yeah.
Sabor Latino.
Mm-hmm.
We need to get some, like, music to go with that.
Oh, yes. We should do a little ad for it, you know?
Sabor Latino.
Yes.
So if you know people that speak Spanish who want to listen to a program in Spanish with Spanish music and Spanish commentary and Spanish news, you should tune in to Sabor Latino every Sunday at 6 p.m. and tell a friend.
Exactly.
And I also want to tell folks last show that we did, we were talking about problems with God and conservative Christians. And prior to that one, we did a show where we talked about Donald Trump.
Oh, yeah.
And our moral decay.
Mm-hmm.
That was another show we did.
Yes.
And you can find all of our podcasts on kpppfm.com.
That's right. Just click on the podcast link and you will be able to listen to all our shows. I think we're up to 27 today.
Cool. We're building momentum.
That's
it's
right.
Going to be very interesting to hear what other people produce for the station.
Mm-hmm.
And those are some things that we have in the works as well.
That's right.
I'm not going to announce anything quite yet until they come to fruition, but we have some exciting and interesting programming coming your way on KPPP LPFM. I want to thank folks for listening in tonight. We talk about a lot of interesting topics that don't get heard a lot on the radio with people that don't usually have a voice on the radio. So it's not going to be like the mainstream that you hear at other stations. And of course, we want to hear what you would like to see and hear on KPPPLPFM.
That's right. You know, you can get a hold of us in multiple ways. One way is giving us a call and leaving a message on our call-in line. It's 701-566-0917. Tell us who you are, where you live. Leave a message. We may air it on the air. So keep it clean.
Mm-hmm.
Also, you can tweet us at media_PPP, or you can send us emails, cindy@kpppfm.com or duke@kpppfm.com. And you can also go to our podcast, and below the podcast, you can leave a comment.
Oh, that's right. It's right on the, conveniently right there.
Yep.
And it will pertain specifically to that show. So if you've got something that you'd like for us to talk about, let us know. And today, again, our topic on KPPPLPFM is black on black crime. You might be wondering, why am I talking about this topic?
Yes, I am wondering.
And, well, the reason is that it's come up a lot lately, recently, as a matter of fact, in the news when discussing the deaths of black and brown people and the Black Lives Matter movement in particular. And what has occurred is that conservative news media and, frankly, mainstream media in general has picked up this narrative about talking instead about black-on-black crime. So whenever there's a death or, you know, a brutality of police against people of color, the media or people in the community, who I think, frankly, are very racist because they don't want to look at the issue, are saying in response to another death at the hands of police or while in police custody, hey, what about black on black crime?
Yeah.
Why are you complaining about your deaths, black people? You kill yourselves too. That is such a ridiculous thing. That's like you shooting somebody and then saying, hey, diabetes kills people too. Why are you talking about me shooting you when you could be talking about heart disease? Heart disease is a great killer. It kills way more people than me shooting you.
That's right. It's hard on people disease, hard on people crime. No, I think that, you know, we talk about this a lot on this station and a lot of the programs is that as a white person, it's very hard for me to think about race and racism. And many white people will talk about being colorblind. They can't see color. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to black on black crime, they'll bring it up because that's the only time I ever hear about that. What about black on black crime? I've heard that from radio stations. I've heard it from white conservatives. And it's like, we're just talking about this dude that got killed. And him and his...
What about the criminal, OJ? What about him?
Oh, yeah, that's right, OJ. And
somebody said that to me the other day. I'm like, we were talking about the commemoration of the anniversary of Emmett Till's death.
Oh, yes, yes.
And for those who don't know, Emmett Till was a black teenager who was lynched for whistling at a white woman. And it was... My comment about this was that, hey, guys... Let's not forget that not too long ago, it wasn't just the Darren Wilsons of the world and the George Zimmermans of the world. In other words, the cops and the vigilantes out there, the stand your grounders, the night watchmans that were able to kill indiscriminately people of color and get away with it in the most horrific of ways, which is why Emmett Till's mother, when the man that killed her son was acquitted, had an open casket.
Yeah.
And it shocked the world.
Yeah. It was in the media everywhere.
Everywhere. And people were really faced with the horror of racism,
mm-hmm.
with the destruction of racism, with what it does to the human body. And it was something that kind of shocked the world. It shocked the nation and it shocked the world. Well, in this same way, we see lynchings happening today at the hands of police and vigilantes. And people have the audacity when you mention these things that to say something like, well, what about OJ? I'm like, what are you talking about?
Well, it's
are you sick in the head? Yeah, why would you even say something like
yes,
that?
We
Did
are.
You fall?
Well, we are. We tend to forget the past. And also we tend to think of the past as, well, that's the way it was back then. There was lynchings. There were people of color getting killed. You know, since white people came to this continent, and we give it a pass because we say, well, that was back in the 60s. And what's happened is that we've had amnesia, what's actually been happening when it comes to the murder.
No, you don't. No, you don't. Don't lie. The reason why white people are okay with the killing of black and brown bodies is because y'all are the ones doing the killing.
That's right. That's
if
right.
you were the ones getting massacred and killed, you wouldn't be just saying, oh, that was in the past.
Yeah, we would
hey,
fix it.
You know
we
how I know?
It.
You know how I know? Because nobody forgets about the Holocaust of the Jewish people, do
they? They don't.
And they say, never forget. Why do they say that? Because it was white people that got killed. And there was not just 6 million Jews killed. There was another like 10 or 12 million people killed that included people with mental and physical disabilities. Gay people,
yeah.
and others. And what I'm saying here, though, is we don't allow people to forget those kinds of things.
That's true. It's a selective amnesia.
Around here, for example, the killing of the white woman.
Cheryl Tendlin.
Yes, that woman that was killed.
In West Fargo.
White folks want to erect a monument mm-hmm. because they want to remember that it was brown and black or brown kids. That had to do with that killing.
Yeah.
They never want to forget that.
No. They crucified him in the media for a good year and a half.
Yes. It's never stopped. See, that's my point.
Mm-hmm.
White people don't forget that kind of thing. When a white person gets killed, everyone never forgets. And let us not forget 9/11 was a huge freaking deal. Granted, there were people of color killed in that building and harmed as a result of that whole thing. Which personally, I don't know. I question a lot of things about that thing because it was when you have so many scientists and engineers saying that there's no possible way that that building could have collapsed the way that it did or that building mm-hmm. number 7 could have collapsed the way that it did without explosives being set on those buildings. and that there's no way that a complete airplane could disintegrate on impact, leaving nothing behind. Mm-hmm. And physics does not allow for that. My mind is like, really? That, so the whole plane just evaporated?
What's
it burned up and evaporated into mist, and there's no remnant of it.
Well, it was not in the 9/11 report. In my earlier comment about having amnesia, mm-hmm. it's a selective amnesia. When it comes to people of color, it's very, very, very selective. You are totally right.
Yeah. So, you know, here's the thing. When it comes to talking about black and black crime, people have been bringing up ludicrous, crazy things about Black Lives Matter movement, about the way that black people should be focused on something else. Don't look over here. Don't look behind the curtain. Because they don't want us to see that the emperor has no clothes,
That's right.
The jig is up, mm-hmm. that you cannot continue to indiscriminately kill brown and black people and think that we're all going to sit idly by with our arms folded and wait for you to kill some more. It has to stop. And so black and black crime is just an excuse. I want to quickly mention that recently in this discussion of Black Lives Matter movement, there was a lot of anger directed at Black Lives Matter leaders in Seattle, Washington, after two Black Lives Matter leaders there interrupted or disrupted his rally.
Bernie Sanders, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And white moderate people lost their minds. Their racism and their anger and resentment at black people came out. Their supremacy came out. Their privilege came out.
Definitely.
And we talked about that. There's, it's one of the many shows and podcast that you can download at kpppfm.com. And you can also go there and check out if we're online.
That's right. We go live and on the air. And we're going to do that a lot more, especially mm-hmm. once we're on the actual terrestrial air. Mm-hmm. Well, we're going to broadcast on the internet also. So you're going to be able to find us on your computer, on your phone, on your radio, in your car.
Don't forget, we want to hear what you have to say. So leave us a message. You have about 2-3 minutes, and you have to keep it clean and leave your name in town, but you can leave us a message. We might use it on the air.
That's right. You know, come on, give us a call. We want to hear your voice. Call 701-566-0917. You know, mm-hmm. if you feel a little bit more timid, just give us a tweet at @media_PPP. And if you feel like you just want to be really secret, just email us, cindy@kpppfm.com or duke@kpppfm.com.
Yeah, it's a good thing we don't have snail mail anymore to deal with, right?
That's right. Don't do that. Don't do that.
Snail mail.
If you're going to write it, do it on a computer and send it to us.
Yeah, that's cool. And today's topic is black on black crime. I would normally never talk about this ridiculous phantom issue.
Yeah.
Other than that, you know, we have to start attacking ridiculous things like Donald Trump.
That's true.
And this is one of them. But to talk about Bernie Sanders and the Black Lives Matter movement for just a second, I wanted to announce something amazing. And that is Cornel West has just endorsed Bernie Sanders.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a real thing. Boy. I had to check it out for a while because when I first heard about it, I thought, let me go look and see what they're categorizing as an endorsement. And what I saw, which was a clip from CNN, sounded just like he was saying that he's the best guy out there that's running right now.
Yeah, that was on our podcast a few days ago.
Right, it was. Mm-hmm. But that did not sound like an endorsement to me. I wasn't like, oh, this is not an endorsement. But now I have heard an interview that Cornel West did on the Fire of the New Generation. And we'll have a link to this with the podcast at kpppfm.com. This is from the Opinionator blog in the New York Times. And this is an interview with Cornel West. And for those who don't know who he is a professor of philosophy and Christian practice at Union Theological Seminary and professor emeritus at Princeton University. He's the author and editor of more than 30 books, including The Black Prophetic Fire and The Radical King. And he spoke to George Yancey mm-hmm. in this interview.
Okay.
And not only that, but Cornel West is probably one of the leading philosophers and black civil rights activists of our time.
Well, he speaks the truth. I, you know, as a white person, it gives me goosebumps to look at what he's saying today. Mm-hmm. I have to kick myself because back in 1996, I was part of a conference in Chicago. We were asked to present from the People Escaping Poverty Project with the Campaign for Human Development, which is a big funder from the Catholic Church. They had Cornel West as one of their keynote speakers.
Wow.
And I missed his speech back in 1996.
Mm. And remember when you saw him speak here at MSU?
Yes, I did get to see him here in Moorhead just a year and a half ago.
That was amazing.
Yeah, we recorded his whole speech, but they came back and they told us we had to take it off the webpage. So.
Yeah, because they hadn't given permission for
that's them. Right.
But they didn't have anything posted there, so that was kind of
that's right,
weird.
But he spoke truth that night.
Oh, yes,
he asked us to get unhinged.
Yes, he did. Yeah, I wrote about that back when I was still editor at the High Plains Reader. And I think it was called The Illusion of Inclusion.
That's exactly what
and
it was
called. And I referenced the report on the racism that was done here in Moorhead. It was really indicted the Moorhead community of having latent racism that would be very hard to get rid of. And it gave a bunch of things that the Moorhead community could do to fix that those things, none of which have been done, by the way.
That's right.
And that was like nearly 15 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, we're in a sad state of affairs in this country when the
Minnesota Advisory Committee to the U.S. Commission on Civil Rights.
That's a mouthful.
Yeah.
Came here and analyzed our community. And we do nothing about it. And even 15 years later, we do nothing about it.
That's right.
And one of the greatest indictments was the problem with the de facto segregation, as it was called, of Black and brown and Native students at RELC, which today's superintendent, what's her name?
Lynn Kovash,
completely ignored, even though she was on a committee that was part of the work that investigated mm-hmm. the racism.
Well, you know, we've had white people-led organizations, white people-led movements in this community for people of color, and it has gotten nowhere.
I know, but that's why it's so exciting that Cornel West would endorse Bernie Sanders, because I don't know if you know this, but Bernie's white.
That's right.
But this is what he said about him, okay? Mm-hmm. First of all, let me tell you what he said that it means to be catching fire in this time for this new generation, okay? And he said, well, for me, it is that dialectic interplay between the old school and prophetic thought and action. I'm an old Coltrane disciple, just like I'm a Christian. You can be full of fire, but that fire has to be lit by a deep love of the people. And if that love is not in it, then the fire actually becomes just a sounding brass, a tinkling cymbal that doesn't get at the real moral substance and spiritual content that keeps anybody going. But especially people who have been hated for so long and in so many ways as Black people have. That's the first thing. So this is what he was looking for. This is mm-hmm. what people of color have been waiting for to see in a leader. This is the opposite of Trump, of course.
Definitely. That's a huge challenge for white people, where Dr. West is saying to love. Love the people you've hated your whole existence.
He's taking this right from Scripture.
Yes.
Do you remember the, I am just a cymbal or clanging drum or something like that? Clanging cymbal. I think that comes right out of Corinthians.
Oh.
And if you don't know, if without love, you are nothing, mm-hmm. says the Lord. And so when Jesus says, if you did it for the least of these, you did it for me, he's talking about Black folks.
That's right. You know, and I have to put something out there to the white progressives who are listening. Cindy evoking Scripture. When people of color are speaking the truth, we need to listen. We don't need to judge. And if you have issues with spirituality or Christianity or the Bible or, you know, organized religion, I'd say you have to suspend that sort of judgment and listen to people of color when they talk about truth.
Well, it's part of their white privilege, you see, because white people have the privilege of choosing their religion. Mm-hmm. My ancestors didn't. The ones that you see here that believe in God devoutly, we're the ones that survived. And not just colonization and starvation and enslavement and land theft and genocide, but also the Spanish Inquisitions, right?
Yeah.
The continued genocide of our people through the War of Independence, the Mexican-American War, the Revolution in Mexico, and so on and so forth, NAFTA, CAFTA, now this new trade agreement
that they've got.
Our people need someone that loves us. But here's what he said about Bernie, okay? He said, and when you love people, you hate the fact that they're being treated unfairly. You tell the truth. Oh, no, this continues on what people need to do if they love, okay?
Okay.
This is how you show love.
All right.
He's talking about love. You sacrifice your popularity for integrity.
Wow.
It doesn't matter if you're popular. You don't care about that because you don't sell out for popularity. If you make people mad, you're okay with that. I just talked about that in a recent article that I wrote that was just published in Last Real Indians, which is a Native American publication that tells you the truth about what's happening in Native American country.
That's right. LastRealIndians.com, right?
LastRealIndians.com. Go check them out. They got truth speakers and prophets and leaders in the Native American community in Last Real Indians. And I was talking about white fragility. I was talking white progressives and how they're killing us with their kindness because they don't have a real love. It's a lukewarm love. It's a fake kind of love, a love that wants to hold us close and also hold close the oppressor of us, the killer of us, and uphold them as correct at the same time that they're upholding our lives as justified as being here.
Yeah.
But they have the right to kill us. What?
Wow.
No, no, you can't do that. That's fake. You have to tell the truth. You have to sacrifice your popularity for integrity. And he goes on and he says, there's a willingness to give your life back to the people, given that in the end, they basically gave it to you, your life.
Yes.
Because we are who we are because somebody loved us anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because somebody loved us anyway, like your ma or your pa. Somebody loved us. We became who we are because somebody loved us. Beginning with God, beginning with our creator. Indigenous people call it the creator or the Ometeotl. We have a spirituality that goes back before the colonization. Tens of thousands of years, maybe hundreds.
Yeah, before Christ, you know.
Well, yeah, our people know something about spirituality and nature and the Mother Earth.
And, you know, for us to be saved as white people in our times, we need to pay attention to people of color. Our best way of connecting is connecting with people of color. In this world today, that's what's going to lead us.
Yeah, and as people of color, our best hope for salvation is for people to, white people, white folks to get out of our way and let us lead our own salvation. White folks ain't never given us anything, ever.
No.
We had to fight for every inch of it and die and give our blood and sweat and tears. And it didn't happen easy or fast. If white folks want to be an ally, help us by talking to your other white folks that aren't listening to us.
That's right.
And telling them to find ways of stopping their aggression on us.
So Dr. West is saying Bernie has this. Bernie
has this. He says, my dear brother Bernie Sanders actually is. He was talking about the tradition of people that are prophetic politicians. And he says the way that Harold Washington was, or the way that Paul Wellstone was. Woot, woot.
Oh, Wellstone.
Shout out to Minnesota.
Yeah.
The way that Shirley Chisholm was.
Oh, yeah. That was great. There's a movie about her that I watched, and it's excellent, what she was doing back in the Nixon administration, I believe.
Yeah.
Yes.
And so these are big people he's putting in the same breath with Bernie Sanders. And he says, these are all prophetic politicians, and Bernie Sanders is too. And he says, he's a prophetic politician. He speaks the truth about wealth and equality. He speaks the truth about Wall Street. He speaks the truth about working and poor people being afterthoughts in terms of the kind of calculations of the oligarchs of our day. He shows that it is possible to be a politician who speaks the truth.
Wow.
That is a big endorsement, but I'm gonna say something that might bother people.
Oh no, buzzkill like thing or what?
Yeah, I'm gonna say something that's gonna bother some people.
Okay, Debbie Downer.
I'm gonna be a Debbie Downer because I love Cornel West.
Oh yeah.
And I respect him.
Oh yeah.
And I also I love Bernie. I think Bernie's great.
I don't quite trust Bernie, but
well, here's the thing. I didn't say I trust him. I say I love him.
Oh, that's right.
Those
that's
are different things. Different,
isn't it? Yes.
Yeah, I love him as a politician, by the way, not as a human being. I don't know him as a person. I don't know whether he's a nice guy or not. Yeah. I mean, I don't really. I think as a politician, I love Bernie Sanders. Like, he's one of the ones up there that I'm like, woo,
well, definitely, Bernie. Definitely refreshing. I mean, compared to anything else you hear, every time I've heard him speak, it's like,
I know, but I want to remind you something. Mm-hmm. There was a young senator from Illinois once upon a day.
That's right.
Who sounded very promising.
He did.
Who talked about change.
I used to read a piece by him before he was actually president, and I used to read it at every meeting.
When oh, you know who people. It is.
Oh, yeah.
Well, he was talking some stuff, wasn't he?
Oh, yeah.
He was saying all the right things,
uh-huh.
Moving in all the right ways in front of all the right people, and it didn't change anything.
That's true.
And he's not the only one. Well, politicians by nature, we know they're going to make a bunch of promises in the campaign.
I know.
And they're not going to carry them out.
Well, that's only one part of the whole strategy, though. It's like the politician and the political aspect is very important, but it's not the end all of be all because, like you just said, we had a young senator from Illinois that went to Harvard Law School who was a community organizer who had the stuff down, and nothing's changed in the past 7 years. And to stop the death of black people by police and the death of people of color in this country, it's going to take more than a presidential candidate to do that because we have all these institutions that are killing people.
Right. But in the political sphere and in the political sphere alone, I'm saying talking the truth isn't enough. You have to do other things. Like, for example, you have to try your best. And I'm not saying that Obama didn't on some things. But what I am saying is this. All of the killings of black people that have been going on, and his speech has been to berate people of color all the way through his administration, first and foremost, to make it sound as if they're responsible in some way for their own plight in life, their own deaths. This is such an ignorant kind of statement coming from a black man who knows full well the history of this country.
Yeah, he
what black people have been subjected to.
Exactly. We you have to study psychology, you have to study human behavior, you have to study culture, you'll understand how human beings behave in the society we're in. And not rely on the media to give you things to think. You have to be able to be thinking on your own. So Obama has been, he knows, and what's been done with him, because every presidential candidate is basically fixed. You know, that might sound like I'm paranoid, but
no, it's totally true.
They're all done in in a way that actually creates this fake thing that this person is representing you is going to do all these things.
Mm. That's why I'm saying, I'm not saying I don't like Bernie Sanders. I'm saying or Cornel West or what they've said or this endorsement. I'm saying I want to see some action.
You know,
and I'm expecting to see something if Bernie Sanders makes it into the White House.
Well, actually,
I comment about whether or not he's for real.
What you should see is you should see things happen before he gets in the White House, because he can. He has power.
Oh, he can do
lots of
things.
He's in Congress. And that's one of the things that politicians, if they actually do something in their campaigns to actually create the change that they're going for, that's going to show truth.
True, true, very true. And Bernie Sanders has done that. He's already done that, which is, I think, one of the reasons why so many people have endorsed him and have followed him. I think, like I said, I think he's a great politician. I'm going to have us take a little break to talk about the hypocrisy of the whole theory of black on black crime, which is the topic of today's show on KPPP LPFM. And normally I wouldn't talk about this because it's the right wing and mainstream media go-to phrase these days every time another black or brown person dies at the hands of police in this country. It's like a ridiculous statement of indifference, because what we're talking about is the lives of black people being lost at the hands of state-sanctioned, approved, ignored violence, lynchings in the modern day America. And at the same time, the mainstream media and the right-wing commentators are responding with, but what about black on black crime?
Okay. Yeah.
Let me ask this other question to derail the conversation about what's really the topic. So I'm going to tell you, the folks that listen to the station, the folks that listen to KPPP LPFM and this program are going to hear information. We're going to give you sources.
That's right.
You can investigate on your own.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully, if you are a progressive, open-minded, consider yourself liberal or a Democrat, or you think that you are one of the people that believes in the movement of Black Lives Matter or in the political leanings of Bernie Sanders and all of these other progressive ideas, then you're going to find that a lot of the things that I say may be helpful to building your skills and actually working in cohesion across racial lines, political lines, religious lines with other people in this community and in this country and in the same battle for the freedom of people in this country.
Mm-hmm. You're telling the truth there.
So I would invite you to continue to listen to this show, because after this satirical break we're going to take in a moment, we're going to be talking about how you can completely debunk this idiocracy of black on black crime. We're going to give you all of the points. There's only six. It's very easy to debunk. We're going to talk about why and how you do that right after this satirical break.
Shocking images are from Huntington Beach, California, where at the conclusion of the U.S. Open of surfing on Sunday, a white mob began rioting. The angry crowd vandalized property, broke the windows of businesses, looted some stores, and brawled with each other on the streets of downtown Huntington Beach. Police used rubber bullets on the unruly mob and arrested at least seven people, including a firefighter from Anaheim. You probably haven't heard much about the white riot in Huntington Beach. That's because the story of white criminal culture is not a story the mainstream media will tell you. But once you scratch the surface, these stories are everywhere you look. Take billionaire hedge fund manager Steve Cohen, for instance. How many times this week have you heard about the federal charges he's been slapped with for alleged insider trading violations? And what about JP Morgan Chase, a company run almost entirely by white men? Well, that financial giant quietly paid $410 million in a settlement after being accused of manipulating the power markets. The sad truth is that the white power structure in this country has no clue how to solve the problems within the white community. Look, I don't want people to be suspicious of white men, but the Huntington Beach riot underlines a stark truth about white culture. The fact is, 84% of white murder victims are killed by other white people. And we really do have to question whether white leadership, where they are on this issue. Conversation is sorely lacking in appeal from the moderate white community. After all, no one forces white people to throw haymakers after their surfing competitions. And when white youth are raised with so much privilege and so few boundaries, these young white men often reject concepts of self-control and not being a jerk. Some people may feel like I'm stereotyping. I don't care. I'm dealing with reality. The white community needs to ask itself, how are we going to deal with this problem? Finally, there's one brave writer in the mainstream media raising that question. Gawker columnist Cord Jefferson handed out a healthy dose of truth following the Huntington Beach white riot. Whites in America have been out from under their European ancestors' boot heels for centuries. California specifically outlawed preferences for non-whites in state hiring and education nearly two decades ago. So being oppressed is no longer an excuse for behavior like this. How long must we wait for the white community to get its act together? Joining me now is Cord Jefferson, the West Coast editor for Gawker.com, author of the aforementioned column, A Dangerous and Irresponsible Culture. Cord, you're not going to hear this kind of thing in the mainstream media. My question to you is, what inspired you to finally rip off this taboo and talk about the problems with white culture?
I'm a person of color, Chris, but first and foremost, I consider myself an American citizen and a resident of Southern California. And seeing what the mob did in Huntington Beach on Sunday night, I just felt there was no way that I could sit on the sidelines anymore in good conscience and watch so many white youths debase themselves the way that they are. And so I think that sometimes people have to stick their necks out. I don't want to use the word martyr, but I guess I'm kind of a martyr on this front.
You know, there are people that are going to tell you that it's just a few bad apples. If you look at the video, you can't say this whole group, this has nothing to do with white people. It's just a few bad apples. What do you say to that?
To that, I say that if that's your actual belief, then you're living with your head in the sand. I used to live in New York City and would occasionally go to Hoboken, New Jersey, St. Patrick's Day Parade. And there were so many young white men there vomiting in the streets, urinating in the streets, getting in fist fights in the streets. It was a sight to be seen.
I've seen it myself. There's college dorms you can go to. Every other room, there's a bong. There are people talking about how much they enjoy drugs. A drug culture that people and white elders don't say anything about it. They kind of wink and they nod.
You're looking at they're learning. The thing is that these young people are learning this kind of behavior in lacrosse camps. They're learning this kind of behavior at college spring break. They're learning this kind of behavior at Ivy League fraternities where drug use and binge drinking are normalized behaviors. And these kinds of places are kind of the hives of moral debasement that are leading to, I think, what we're seeing, which is this white crime scourge.
Here's my question to you. People are going to say, you know, this is someone who has a personal problem with white people. You have a personal problem with white people? Is this animus?
No, I think any time that you tell the truth, there's going to be those people who come out and think that you're doing it for some insidious reason and say that you're a racist. I kind of knew that some white people were going to say that this is just. I knew that some white people were going to call this playing the race card, but it isn't playing the race card. My best friend is white. My mother is actually white. My prom date in high school was a white woman. She was very white, actually. She used to ride horses and do that whole thing. So obviously, very very deep. I have very deep roots in the white community. This isn't hatred for whites. This is just tough love. And I felt it was time that somebody told the truth to these people. It's a hard conversation, but it's one we need to have.
And I'm glad we're having it. And my question to you, Cord, is what is it going to take to get the white power structure, prominent whites, Hillary Clinton, Joe Biden, to start speaking out on this kind of thing, to start talking about the St. Paddy's Day parades, to start talking about the drug culture on campuses, to start to even just take the first step and condemn the Huntington Beach riots?
You know, I wish that I knew. When I look towards the white leadership, when I look towards the Justin Biebers of the world and the Rush Limbaughs of the world and the Sean Hannitys of the world, I often hear them talking about the problems within the black community, but I have yet to really see them take a serious, long look at the problems within the white community and look at these kinds of violent offenses that are going on within white neighborhoods and on white college campuses all the time. And that's been difficult to watch, and so... to them, I would just say, physician, heal thyself first. And I'm glad that people like you are stepping up in the white community and really sort of looking at this problem for what it is, which is a serious, serious issue.
We appreciate that. Cord Jefferson, the West Coast editor for Gawker.com. Thank you.
Thank you.
If you watched that segment and thought that's an absolutely ridiculous premise and an absolutely terrible way to talk about millions of people who share nothing except their general broad pigmentation, you are correct. And remember that the next time you hear those same arguments, but with a different word in place of the word white. And that's the memo. We'll be right back with Click 3.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that reminds me a lot of the kinds of stories we've been seeing locally about immigrants and people of color.
Yes, that's right.
The same kind of rhetoric.
Yeah.
And it's disturbing.
Yes, and also I find it very interesting that they put a lot of warnings on there. Warning, this is satirical. Warning, like, loosen your mind so you can actually see the complex humor. And it's like, why are there so many warnings up for white people to hear about white-on-white violence, you know?
Yeah, and it is violence. It produces violence. Recently, all of this Trump talk resulted in two men kicking a homeless man, beating a homeless man who wasn't undocumented, by the way.
That's right.
Mexican, and it was in Los Angeles or something like that?
No, it was Boston.
Oh, Boston, yeah. And it was, this is what happens when you breed hate. It creates more hate.
That's right. That's why there's hate crimes. And those individuals, there was talk of hate crimes, but I don't know if they were actually charged, but...
Yeah. There. Well, I don't know. I haven't heard anything more about that story, but it's very disheartening to see that even on social media, when we're talking about the racism and the history of racism and the acts that are happening today, that there's still white people that'll say, why are you talking about this? You're just creating more hate. And I think, what now are you talking?
We're exposing the hate, not creating it. It's already
talking
there.
Talking about racism to white people means we're being racist? Why? Because we're showing that white people have a history of killing us? That somehow breeds hatred toward white people? Does it make white people hate themselves when they learn that other white people kill, you know, white people? We're going to get to this right now because we're talking about black on black crime, which is a crazy idea that's been bantied about in media, in mainstream media, especially on right wing television networks. And it's preposterous. And we're going to debunk this nonsense right now.
Good, good.
If anyone has just tuned in, you're listening to KPPPLPFM. This is Cindy Gomez-Shemp.
And this is Duke Gomez-Shemp.
And right now we're broadcasting on Live 365. Soon you're going to be able to find us on your radio dial at 88.1 FM. And of course, we want to hear what you have to say. I'm going to be sharing some comments today about some of the, or, you know, in upcoming broadcasts about some of the local media stories, the things that you care about that you want to hear on the radio program. And we definitely want to hear your comments.
Oh, definitely. We want to hear from you. I'm glad we have comments, but you can leave an actual voice comment on our call-in line at 701-566-0917. You can also tweet us at media_PPP. Email us at cindy@kpppfm.com or duke@kpppfm.com. You can also listen to our podcast at kpppfm.com. Click on the podcast link underneath the podcast. Give us your opinion.
Well, first I wanted, before we get into the debunking of the black-on-black crime thing, I want to talk really briefly about this confrontation between Megyn Kelly on Fox News and Cornel West, who we were just talking about endorsing Bernie Sanders, which is really shocking and amazing story. And basically she was asking this really stupid question that kind of goes along with our theme today, which is, why aren't black people protesting black-on-black crime?
Oh, boy.
And so we'll have that link for you on our website. But anyway, in this particular story that was on Salon.com, Megyn Kelly demands that Cornel West explain this to her, and she plays this video that's gone viral of this grandmother, this angry black grandmother, Peggy Hubbard, who basically is the self-loathing white supremacy apologist. And she just totally degrades the black community.
She's a black woman.
She's a black woman, of course. Mm-hmm. Yeah, she reminds me of like Leon Francis locally, who's always like, if you're going to act like a thug, then you deserve to die.
That's
this
is a Tea Partier, you know? Mm-hmm.
This is, well, he was a former president of the Tea Party. But this kind of rhetoric from black people, or that woman in South Carolina was, or North Carolina, that was wearing the Confederate flag and saying that it was about heritage and,
that
slavery was good and that slavery was voluntary. I'm like, I mean, it doesn't even get more ridiculous than this kind of thing. But listen to this ridiculous woman go on this rant, hating black people, talking to them as if she thinks she's Uncle Ruckus and she's got vitiligo. Uh-huh. This woman, if you don't know what that is, go watch The Boondocks.
That's right.
But this woman, she's like Uncle Ruckus, and she's like, what? I hate black people. Mm-hmm. So check it out.
Are you kidding me? Police brutality? How about black brutality? A little girl is dead. You say black lives matter? Her life matters. Her dreams matter. Her future matters. Her promises mattered. It mattered. But night after night after night, murder, 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 murder. Black on black murder. But yet you are out there tearing up your own. It's not your other people's for a criminal, for a thug. You're yelling at the police. You. You're shooting at the police. Police drops your ass. Oh, poor so-and-so. He died due to police brutality. 127 homicides later, y'all want to holler police brutality? Black people, you're a joke. You're tearing up communities over thugs and criminals. You think the police are out here for fun? You think they're out here for games? You shoot at them, they're going to shoot at you. That's just the realism of it. If you try to kill them, their job is to serve and protect, not serve and die.
Wow.
Wow.
And, you know, I'm going to get to in this article that we're going to review in Fusion.net, and we'll have that link on KPPPLPFM. Sorry, KPPPFM.com for people to check out on the debunking of this idiotic black-on-black crime rhetoric. But I just wanted to mention a couple of ridiculous things that she said. One being that her life matters, this little black girl that died. I saw a lot of people talking about this girl being killed on Twitter. Most of them were black people. Of course, there was this surge of people talking about it, like, why are you focusing on this other person that just got shot? Mansoor Bell Bay, I believe his name was. That was a teenager that was shot on the during the protest anniversaries for Michael Brown.
All right.
And I think she's a Ferguson resident or something. She lives nearby. There was a lot of people in that community talking about it. And we'll get to how black people do actually protest against crime in their communities. But also, there was white agitators have been caught, as have white cops, damaging, looting, setting fires, because they want black people to be blamed for these things. This has been in the mainstream media. I don't even know why this woman doesn't realize that this stuff is going on, and she just wants to blind herself and convict an entire population of black people. She sounds like a lunatic.
Yeah.
Just as ridiculous as that satirical video that we just heard. But in a much more hateful and evil way.
Yeah, and I think it's just terrible that Megyn Kelly played that in front of Cornel West and said, what about black on black crime? And it's disgusting. So rudimentary for what the man speaks about, the truth he speaks about, and the complexity he can bring together in a few moments for her to be, what about this?
Mm-hmm. But, you know, he responded by saying, people who are marginalized for hundreds of years, who have their wealth and their labor stolen for them for centuries, who are put in ghettos, who are criminalized, who are targeted for violence and poverty and medical experiments and a lack of resources and education and environmental racism and the like, you know, all of these things. People that are targeted like that, people are going to act out the violence carried out on them in their communities. They're people that are living in this sad despair. That's what he said, this sad despair. And of course you're going to see higher incidences of crime and, you know, gun violence and gang violence and all of that sort of thing in communities that lack any resources, as they have been marginalized by white society because of white supremacy in this country from the beginning of time.
Mm-hmm.
So this woman is, you know, very, very misinformed.
That's right.
And, Cornel West has also recently mentioned that this is the era in journalists, but specifically he was talking about of the sellout in black journalists, of the sellout, the coconut, as I referred to in an article I wrote in the People's Press Project, the coconut.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of black coconuts out there. They want to shuffle and they want to look down on the floor and yes, massa, the white man, and and ask them, what would you like me to do? You want me to talk to these Negroes for you and tell them what's up? You want me to talk to these Mexicans for you and tell them what they need to do to beg and scrape a little bit better? That's what we're facing in this country. So this idea that black on black crime is an issue, really, when you think about it, Gary Young talked about this. I'm going to quote what he said. America is very segregated, and its criminality conforms to that fact. So the victims of most crimes are the same races as those who committed them. 84% of white people who are killed every year in this country are killed by other white people. Hello.
Wow.
White people who buy illegal drugs are most likely to buy them from other white people. Far from being extraordinary, the fact that black criminals are more likely to commit crimes against other black people makes them just like everybody else. They live in the neighborhood they live in. A more honest term for black-on-black crime would just simply be crime.
Exactly, crime.
White people and people that are wanting to conflate these two issues in the mainstream media are just being ignorant and, you know, blind.
Exactly, and also acting out their own segregation. Because as we talked about in many podcasts, we talk about 75% of white people don't have a friend who's a person of color. Mm-hmm. It's only 20, it's like 7 out of 10, you know?
Mm-hmm. And then, of course, the gun violence issue. Well, that's a matter of public health. But they don't even want the CDC to get involved with this. They don't want the Attorney General to comment on gun violence in this country. They don't want anybody to talk about controlling bullets or guns or wars or ammunition or police in this country. Mm-hmm. This is a militarized country, and we don't want to talk about that.
That's right.
And a lot of access to guns has to do with a variety of different structural inequalities. So these two, Jonah Birch and Paul Heidman, said this about this gun violence issue in black communities.
Okay.
In an article in Jacobin, they said, research suggests that violent crime rates are driven by a variety of social factors which tend to make American cities particularly prone to gun violence against black residents. Among most of these factors are the very high levels of neighborhood segregation, there it is again, concentrated and underemployment, poverty and dearth, that means a lack of adequate social services, or institutional resources. That's what I was just saying.
That's right.
Fundamentally, gun violence has to be treated like other kinds of public health problems, not as the basis for continuous empty calls for an introspective discussion on black-on-black crime. And like other kinds of public health disparities, tackling high rates of interpersonal violence requires confronting the social context in which they occur.
That's right. The
social context in which these violence crimes are occurring, mostly against black and brown people, is in a white supremacist society. That's where we are in America.
That's why I said you need to become educated. Study. This information is available. It's clearer to see when you actually know what you're talking about.
And you know what? White people, if you're going to talk about black on black crime, then we talk about white on white crime.
That's right.
Because the leading cause of death among white men ages 19 to 24 is homicide. It's not diabetes. It's not heart disease. It's homicide.
Wow.
And for white women, it's the fourth leading cause of death. I wonder where diabetes, breast cancer, heart disease, and other major issues fall in that. Because I just named off the other three major killers I can think of. And this is it's the fourth leading cause of death.
Wow.
Now, contrary to some of the narrative about blacks and how they don't care about their own communities, like this hypocritical black loathing, self-loathing woman that we just heard from, black people do care very much about their communities. They're the ones pulling for their communities all the time. And in fact, if you just look on the Googles, you can find all sorts of marches and demonstrations against crime in communities that have been held in places like Chicago, New York, Newark, New Jersey, Pittsburgh, Saginaw, Michigan, Gary, Indiana, and many others. You just want to bring out this narrative that doesn't exist. Mm-hmm. It's a lie. And there's whole catalogs of movies, albums, sermons. Use the YouTube. Mm-hmm. Generations of directors, musicians, religious leaders, all that are urging people in their own black communities to bring order to those communities, to bring peace to those communities. White people just want to act like black people don't matter because black people have no feelings. That's they right. don't even care about themselves. See how savage and unruly they are? They kill each other. That's why it's okay to kill them, see?
That's propaganda.
They're disposable. They're just like, you know, they're like roadkill. I mean, these things mm-hmm. are just like,
well, it's the same mantra
vermin.
That's existed in this country from day one.
Right. And it's somehow, racist, people.
Exactly.
And somehow it is people think racist.
People think it went away. It is building strong. You know?
Nah. Okay. Number 5. Crime in black communities and crime committed against black people by the state, by the police, are not the same thing. Stop convoluting the two things.
That's right.
They're not equal. Just like I said earlier, if I go and I shoot your dog and you get upset and I say to you, well, why are you so upset? Heartworm kills dogs too.
Oh, boy.
That would be ridiculous, mm-hmm. right?
He would have died eventually anyways.
We're talking about people here.
Mm-hmm.
And people have the distaste, the heartlessness to respond to the deaths of black and brown people in this country. Specifically to black people in the Black Lives Matter movement with, what about black on black crime?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's so disheartening to see that even in the news, especially when I see it in our local news. I'm like, whoa, what has happened to journalism? What has happened to integrity, empathy, kindness, research, history?
That's right.
And, you know, frankly, these kinds of things only incite more hate against black people. But these things, when we have black people suffering crime in their communities at a higher rates than in white neighborhoods where things are just, you know, like peachy keen fine all the time, that's just what happens in poorer communities with no resources mm-hmm. that have been marginalized, disenfranchised, and subjected to police and state violence, such as the case of Ferguson, which we've been talking about tonight.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And for those of you who've just tuned in, you're listening to KPPPLPFM. We're broadcasting on Live 365 right now. You'll find us on the radio dial at 88.1 FM. And I'm here with Duke Gomez-Shemp.
Oh, yeah.
And we are talking about black-on-black crime. We're debunking this whole stupid idea, the whole notion. I don't want to hear it anymore.
That's right.
If someone in your circle of friends or family says it, here's what you can tell them. It's ridiculous.
Yes.
First of all, it's wrong. It's racist. Black people who kill black people go to jail. Mm-hmm. They get in trouble. Disproportionately, black people and brown people have the books thrown at them for things white people don't even get punished for. We just talked about that on a recent show, didn't we?
We sure did.
And you know what? Focusing on black-on-black crime distracts from the derails, I would say,
yes.
from the current news that is worthy of discussion and analysis. Worse, this quote from this article that we're going to have it on our website on KPPPFM. Worse, it says it randomly zooms in on one phenomenon that sometimes black people who are get killed by other black people.
Yeah.
Which ignores the issue we're talking about. That police do not have the right to execute people.
Mm-hmm.
That's why we have due process of the law.
Yes.
For all of those out there that are like, we have to follow the law.
That's right.
Why doesn't it apply to the police?
True.
Why doesn't it apply to prosecutors?
Mm-hmm.
Why doesn't it apply to grand juries?
Why doesn't it apply to rich white people?
Why doesn't it apply to court clerks? Why doesn't it apply to white people?
Mm-hmm.
And Ta-Nehisi Coates, which we also talked about in another podcast recently, was said that the policy of America has been, for most of American history, white supremacy. The high rates of violence in black neighborhoods do not exist outside of those facts. They are evidence of them.
Wow.
And His recent book, Between the World and Me, is fascinating. I really highly recommend folks read that. Every American, every child in school should have to read that. If you have to read Mark Twain,
you
should also have to read Between the World and Me. And Ta-Nehisi Coates is an amazing new book, really breaks down the hatred of Black people in America. And the perception of crime in Black communities by white people is totally wrong. I will leave you with this one final thought before we go to our musical break. What is our last song? What are we going to leave with?
It's When the Battle is Over.
Oh, who's that by?
Well, let me look real quick. It's actually a remix. It's a remix of older music.
Oh.
And it's done by Donald Lawrence, copyright 2011. Oh. So it's going to take us back and just listen to the words. It really connects with what we're talking about tonight.
Oh, cool. I always love your musical choices.
Oh, yeah.
But we're talking about the black-on-black crime myth that is being touted all over conservative radio and news, and how you can debunk this nonsense. One of the ways that we have to acknowledge this is nonsense is acknowledging white supremacy and white privilege and white Americans' perceptions of Black people. You have biased perceptions. All people do, even Black and brown people, because there's so much white supremacy and anti-Black and anti-brown hate in this country that everyone is now biased, even against themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Just like that poor, crazy Black woman that we heard from earlier.
That's right.
This is the quote. White Americans overestimate the proportion of crime that is even committed by people of color, and they associate people of color with criminality. For example, white respondents in a 2010 survey overestimated the actual share of burglaries, illegal drug sales, and juvenile crimes that were committed by African Americans by 20 to 30%. Wow. In addition to that, implicit bias research has uncovered widespread and deep-seated tendencies among whites, including criminal justice practitioners. That means cops and judges,
if
you didn't notice, or correctional officers.
And lawyers.
To associate Blacks and Latinos with criminality.
Mm-hmm.
And that is exactly why we have to stop this dumb conversation about Black-on-Black crime. Don't let it happen in your circle of friends or family anymore. Shut it down. We're leaving you today with classic remake of When the Battle is Over by Donald Lawrence. Thank you for listening to KPPP-LP-FM.
We're going to take you back to the 80s. Make some noise, y'all. Come on, put your hands together. Make some noise.
Kim McFarlane.